WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 7th, first Sunday of June 2026. I am Rob Jerisline. Thanks so much for joining me. Great weekend if you love to fish. Definitely prime time. June fishing is here for walleyes, bass, multiple species. I got out myself this weekend down in southeast Minnesota on the Mississippi River in the Winona area. My boys also went out fishing on one of the docks. One evening this week, they were out about 5 minutes, and then one of those storms came roaring through the Twin Cities and drove them home. Volatile weather out there can change fast, can't it? I've only got one guest with us here today on WCCO Outdoors. Kelly Straka is the Fish and Wildlife Division Director from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Kelly's great. She's been in that role, I don't know, it's been about 18 months or so. She's going to talk to us about the new electronic licensing system, which kicks in just 2 days. It starts this Tuesday, June 9th. We've been talking about its official launch here for a couple of weeks. We've been talking about the greater development of the new ELS for about 5 years, I think. It's been a long process. And I know the DNR Commissioner Sarah Stroman and some of the other brass on 6th floor there at 500 Lafayette Avenue in St. Paul, the DNR headquarters, are very happy to get this project going and under their belts. As I've mentioned before, this is probably the last year of the Stroman administration. You never know. She could be reappointed, but she's been there 8 years. And I think they'll be pleased if they can get this under their belt, pull off this electronic licensing system upgrade. We will talk to Kelly Straka about that and what it means for you if you go and buy a license here starting on Tuesday. As I am wont to do, I like to discuss some news items that are brewing out there on the outdoor scene. I wrote my column this week in Outdoor News about chronic wasting disease. That's something I've talked about before. I want to tip my hat to the New York Times, a freelance writer out of Helena, Montana, named Jim Robbins, who wrote a piece for the Times. And then I was listening to the guys, the Meat Eater podcast, talking about this topic also. They had a guest on their broadcast named Catherine Hay, talking about some chronic wasting disease research. A couple points here. One, the Robbins piece kind of talked about how states and natural resource agencies are, I won't call it completely throwing in the towel, but you can tell they're getting worn down. They feel like they're fighting a losing battle. This is a disease that kills cervidae, most notably in this part of the world, white-tailed deer, but also elk out west. And we've got growing elk populations in this part of the country also. Wisconsin, I just saw some numbers there. I think they're up to, they're going to be close to 700 elk in that state, 600-700 elk, I think, in Wisconsin. That's been a long process. They got going with elk there in the mid-1990s. I remember when they first released some, and it kind of was fits and starts. But in the past 5 years, it definitely seems to have hit critical mass, and the elk herd over in Wisconsin is growing nicely. I hope we can do that also here in northeastern Minnesota. But I digress from the topic of CWD. The Robbins story in the Times quoted a forest wildlife manager named Daniel Skinner, and he said, quote, "It's harder and harder to throw troops at the front line. We've gone from one county in Illinois to two counties to over 20 counties, and our staff has not increased 20-fold. We can no longer make a meaningful difference." That seems to be the vibe with CWD containment. Southeast Minnesota is another example. I've talked about it. We've got a number of deer permit areas down there where the DNR has decided they're no longer going to do targeted culling, that it just no longer is worth the money and the effort. When you hit 5% infection rates in some of those areas, that's when these agencies kind of call it off and say, we'll have to see what we can do with hunters to control the deer herd. I suspect we're going to see those infection rates really blow up in southeast Minnesota as a result of that. You know, the only reason we talk about chronic wasting disease is because of mad cow disease. And in the 1990s, the government in the United Kingdom said there was no threat to human health from BSE, which is mad cow disease. And eventually there was. Eventually, what, like 35, 40 people died in the UK because of mad cow. Now, they got it contained because cows are a domestic creature, right? You can clean facilities out. You can pretty much eliminate it from a domestic animal. You can't do that with wild deer and elk. That's the problem with CWD, a related prion-based illness. And there's still this concern, can chronic wasting disease jump into humans, cross that species barrier, and cause there's kind of the human variant called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease in people. And the Times piece, as well as the Rinella podcast, quoted this Catherine Hayes. She's from the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases in Hamilton, Montana, about some research they've been doing there to study the prospect of deer-to-human transmission. And the results that they're getting there support the generally accepted science that this strong species barrier is in place. And even in a lab where it sounded like they were mixing, you know, human tissues, they called it organoids, with infected deer tissue from with CWD, and they're mixing it up all aggressively, they could not get these prions to jump into the human cells. So that's really good news. And the other thing she told Ranella was, you know, Creutzfeldt-Jakob, and I've talked about this before, the rates we see of spontaneous Creutzfeldt-Jakob, this prion-based illness in people, is the same in areas with no CWD in this country as in areas with CWD. So it doesn't seem like people being exposed to CWD hunters, if they were more likely to get CJD, you'd see those rates higher in places like Wisconsin and out west, Colorado, Wyoming, where you've had long-term infection of chronic wasting disease in the cervidae populations. So we're not seeing that. And that's good news. I think that's worth sharing and reminding folks that, you know, right now it does not appear that CWD is jumping the species barrier. And we don't want that to happen, obviously. Who knows where it could go if and when that ever does occur. People ask me, well, Rob, like this fall, are you going to hunt in a CWD area? Would you eat a deer that was infected with CWD? And my answer remains, yes, I will hunt in an area with CWD. That's where my dad's place is in southeast Minnesota. I will have my deer tested before me or any of my family consumes it. And if it tests positive, we will not eat it. Even though the species barrier seems pretty rock solid, nothing's 100% in science, and I am not interested in making me or my family part of the grand experiment to see if CWD can ever jump the barrier. I'm not going to use my family as a case study in that. I'm not going to risk that. Some listeners out there may feel differently, and that's up to you. And one final note on this that I did point out in my column, this Catherine Hayes said they do want to do some studies where they try to see if they can get CWD, again, only in a lab environment, to jump the species barrier into cattle cells to see if that's possible, because there's people worried about that. And I tell you what, if we ever find out that it's easy for CWD to jump the species barrier into cattle, domestic cattle, look out for wild deer populations and the future of deer hunting in this country. I think that's a big looming topic out there, and I hope that doesn't occur and we can continue to keep this terrible cervidae disease at least contained within those species like deer and elk. And best case, figure out a way to prevent its spread. But as I started the segment with, seems like that's we don't see much light at the end of that tunnel. Anyway, let's grab a break. We will return. We'll talk about some good news, the launch of the new electronic licensing system here in Minnesota this Tuesday, June 9th. Don't go away. More WCCO Outdoors after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 830. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 7th. I'm Rob Gerisline. We're going to devote the next two segments to talking about the new electronic licensing system that the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is unveiling in just a couple of days. Kelly Straka will be with us here in just a moment. Before we do that, a news item that I wanted to mention. If you listen to this broadcast as the 2026 Minnesota legislative session ended, you know I talked a little bit about how there was a lot of wheeling and dealing that went on with the Outdoor Heritage Fund. That's the sales tax dollars that are dedicated for habitat causes, outdoor causes. And generally that bill flies through pretty clean, but there were a bunch of amendments this year and there was this compromise. And part of the compromise was that a portion of those dollars that go to the Conservation Partners Legacy Small Grants Program, all those dollars for this cycle are going to the Metro. In the past, those dollars have been more evenly divided between the Metro and outstate Minnesota, but it was part of the compromise between Democrats and Republicans. Outdoor News actually had a commentary this week from Michael Nemers, president of the Pioneer Heritage Conservation Trust. It was an open letter to Governor Tim Walz urging him to veto that out of the LaSarge Sams Outdoor Heritage Council final bill, noting that it was going to cost his organization and a lot of other outstate organizations some dollars in the coming year. This change was also debated extensively at the LaSarge Sams Outdoor Heritage Council meeting. I believe it was like on May 27th. Outdoor News also had a story about that. I think it's far too late for Governor Walz to veto or line item veto anything out of that legislation. So I guess you could call it too little too late. But nonetheless, I thought it was interesting that there's a conservation group in outstate Minnesota, probably a lot of them, but this one decided to write a commentary for Outdoor News saying, hey, this is a bad deal. This is costing us the ability to implement conservation projects in our part of the state. Like I said, this is for 1 year for this cycle, and I got to think we're not going to see that again in 2027. But you never know with all the wheeling and dealing that apparently is going on now with this legislation. If we have a gubernatorial debate at Game Fair, I guarantee you this will be a question for the candidates. Will they simply honor the recommendations of the LaSard Sam Outdoor Heritage Council so we don't get into these shenanigans again at the legislature? But hey, that's kind of what happens at the state capitol, right? Let's move on and talk ELS now. This coming week, something really big is going down. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is officially unveiling its new electronic licensing system, ELS. You've seen that those three initials everywhere here in recent weeks. I feel very lucky to have Kelly Straka, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Division Director. She's joining me right now for a segment or two to talk about the big launch. Kelly, thanks a lot for carving out the time to discuss the new system with me. I know it's been a big process to get to this point, and you guys probably got butterflies in your stomach as we kick this off.
Hey, Rob, thanks for having me. You're absolutely right. This is a very exciting time for the state. I'm really excited to be involved in this project and can't wait for the big launch that we have coming up. So thanks for having me today.
So I want to take our time here and kind of go through what's going to happen. Let's start out with where we were, and then we'll talk about what's happening this week and through this weekend, and then what's going to happen on Tuesday, June 9th. First of all, where we were, the existing, we're calling it legacy system now, ELS system, electronic licensing system, is, I guess, 25 years old. I remember when your predecessor, Dave Ulfeldt, talked about getting this process going, and he joked that the system was old enough to drink. Well, now it's, what, old enough to, I guess, have a discount on car insurance if it's over 25 years. It's been a long process. Can you talk about the old system a little bit? I don't know if you were around for much of that, Kelly.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And the joke for my predecessor, I heard it too. I was certainly on board for those conversations. And you're right about the car insurance discount. So it has been about 25 years that we've been on the legacy system. And I would say that as a user of the legacy system, I think it served us really well. We are fortunate to have that. It was a great system. It's just the reality is that it is 25 years old. And so even being able to maintain a system that old, the vendor at the time could no longer maintain it. So we had that. And we also knew more recently, certainly what we're seeing in other states, certainly what we're hearing from our user base, our license buyers, is wanting to have some new things that the current system didn't have. But I think that's where a big part of it, when we talk about where we was, that system, where we were, that system was great for a long time. And we knew it was time to modernize.
I know from working in my own business that you run into that. You have an old system that works, but it gets to the point you can't find people to maintain it because of the way the software is written or, you know, whatever it might be. Anytime I jump on and use the system the past few years, it was like, wow, this is, you could just tell the way it was laid out, the fonts, whatever. It was just old. So the process got going here several years ago. You looked for a vendor, tell me if I'm wrong, that had maybe implemented a similar modern system in other states. Is that correct?
Yeah. So there was originally, and this was before my time on the project, so I'll have to keep it a little high level. But yes, we put out what's called an RFP or a request for a proposal. There aren't too many companies across the country that can do these kinds of systems. There are several. And so certainly the bid went out and the contract was awarded to a group called S3. And now S3, right shortly after that contract was signed, was purchased by a group called Payit. Now Payit does run hunting and licensing systems in other states like Arkansas, Mississippi. They also do some vehicle boat titling and registrations, I believe, in Louisiana. And so certainly that was one of our things, is wanting to make sure that we were having a vendor that does run similar systems in other states. And we can therefore benefit from the lessons they've learned there and vice versa, right? Other states can have the same license system that Minnesota has. And so I think we'll start to see some consistency between states that way too.
The process, I think DNR would admit, has taken longer than you initially wanted it to. I think anyone who has implemented a new software system has some patience and some understanding for what DNR has gone through. It always takes longer than you think.
Yeah, there have been quite a few changes along the way, and the recognition, you know, to kind of come full circle to how we started this conversation. We're dealing with a 25-year-old legacy system that has an incredible amount of data. And so even recognizing, wanting to make sure that we can maintain all of the existing data and maintain user profiles for all of our customers and be able to transfer those to the new system, that's a big part of this too. And so the system as a whole is massive. It's a lot bigger than hunting fishing licenses. I'm sure we'll talk about this, but that's the recognition of this project turned out to be quite a bit bigger than I think anyone was anticipating on the front end.
You know, when you hear that you're working with a vendor that's worked in other states, I think the layperson might say, well, gosh, can't you just insert the word Minnesota for Mississippi and plug and chug? It's not that simple, though, is it?
Yeah, that's one of the things we learned along the way with this project is I'm certainly acknowledging that we have, you know, our license catalog is over 400 products and we have things that are unique to Minnesota. When I think about our, like, think about our combination licenses with spouse vouchers. So that is something that the other states didn't have. And so all of a sudden it was having to create these new things in the licensing system that the vendor hadn't worked through before. And so it's really been, I think, a great learning opportunity for all of us involved on the project. But those are the things that, you know, you can't always account for in some of those planning timelines. And so we're just really excited to be where we are right now.
You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. We're chatting with Kelly Straka, the Minnesota DNR's Fish and Wildlife Division Director, about the new ELS system, electronic licensing system, which is going into place this Tuesday, June 9th. We just talked about some of the background on the existing system. Let's talk about this transition week, which we're in the middle of right now, Kelly. What's basically happening? You're transferring over the old licensing system data into the new system so we can launch it on Tuesday?
100%. So the cutover period from transitioning to the old legacy system to our new ELS, that period started at 11:59 on June 1st. And so running all the way up until public launch on June 9th, we're going to be in that cutover period. And what that really allows is time for all the data migration. The reason your listeners care about this is because that means that all of our user profiles for licenses we've already purchased, this year's fishing license, if you already have yours, or even your history of license purchases, all that's going to migrate to the new system. And so it's really exciting and really important that we get that migration right. And so people can log in, create their account on day one, on Tuesday, June 9th, be able to create your account, and you'll be able to see your existing licenses right there in your history for you.
I think everybody, don't we all have a customer number? Will that customer number transfer over or are we going to need new ones?
100%. Users will be able to use their DNR customer number, and that'll be a great way to be able to get into your profile.
Okay. And another interesting wrinkle in this transfer is since license sales ended at midnight this past Monday going into Tuesday, and the DNR can't sell any licenses until midnight going into Tuesday morning, June 9th. It's not like if you don't have a license, we're not telling people you can't fish. We're saying, by golly, you got a bonus week here, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. I've heard people refer to it as a holiday, and I don't really know if I look at it as a holiday, but certainly we absolutely recognize we want people outdoors, right? Regardless if you can buy a license right now or not. And so from all the way up until June 9th, you will be able to fish without a license during that period. But again, come Tuesday, June 9th, you better get online and get yourself a license so you'll be all ready to go.
All regular rules and regulations still apply. You got to abide by the limits. You got to abide by fishing hours where they exist. Conservation officers are still going to be out enforcing those rules. It's just that if you didn't buy your license before Monday at midnight, you're gonna get a week where you can go test the water, so to speak, without a license.
Spot on, Rob. Well done.
Okay. Timing kind of good, right? There's no hunting going on. We're after the turkey season ended. We're after two really important weekends of fishing license purchases prior, of course, to the opener back in early May and then Memorial Day weekend. Those are got to be two of the biggest weekends for buying licenses in advance. So a lot of people have already bought their fishing licenses, probably most folks. It also coincides with this Take a Kid Fishing weekend, which is June 5th to the 7th, when a lot of folks don't need to buy a license anyway. So I presume the timing of this is not accidental.
You know, folks, it's almost like Rob knows exactly what went into this decision, but you're completely right. And so the seasonality, what I would look at is the seasonality of our seasons, both hunting and fishing. This window was intentionally chosen for that. You know, we ran up until knowing leading up even until the governor's fishing opener, our statewide fishing opener, really busy time for license sales. We also know with the turkey season structure the way it is, we didn't want to make this transition in the middle of the turkey seasons, right? How confusing that could be for people too. And so just recognizing that this time really did coincide with a lower period of license sales so that we can get the system up and rolling, get people logged in with no interruption.
It strikes me as a marketing opportunity for DNR, encouraging folks go out and if you want to go try fishing again, see if you want to get into it, test it this weekend and then buy a license on June 9th.
See how exciting that is? And I will just say, I mean, I don't think fishing in Minnesota needs more marketing, but it always does. Let's be honest. It speaks for itself once you get out there. So hopefully folks will take this opportunity to get out, get some fishing, bring the kids, enjoy it. And it's supposed to be a beautiful weekend. So I know I'll be out there as well.
Kelly, let's grab a break and then come back and we'll talk about what the new system will look like when it kicks off on Tuesday, June 9th.
Sounds great. Thanks.
That's Kelly Straka from the Minnesota DNR. Let's grab a break. More WCCO Outdoors after these messages. Welcome back, everybody. WCCO Outdoors on this Sunday, June 7th. I'm Rob Gerisline. I want to continue our conversation right now with Kelly Straka. She is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Division Director. We are talking about the launch of the new electronic licensing system, which officially kicks off this Tuesday, June 9th. This is a big deal. Kelly and I spent the last segment talking about the legacy system, which we've had for about 25 years, of the transition week, which is wrapping up as the clock strikes midnight going into Tuesday morning. And let's talk about what this new system looks like. Where do we start here, Kelly? I guess basically there's an app for that, right? Is that a good place to start?
That's a great place to start. I think the mobile app is one of the things that we have heard for years from licensed buyers. Man, we really need this in Minnesota. I think anybody who goes and recreates in the outdoors in other states, you know, certainly has seen the advantages of having a mobile app. And so really excited to be able to be rolling out the mobile app for the new licensing system. And so everybody will be able to enjoy that, having everything right on their smartphones in their pocket.
So there's going to be multiple ways to buy a license, correct? You can buy it through an app. I can buy it, I presume, still online at mndnr.gov, or I can still go to a retailer, old school.
Yeah, this is the really important point that I want to make very clear is one of the biggest advantages of this system. There's new shiny tools, absolutely, but it's just really increasing flexibility. So to your question of how to get a license, yes, we will have a mobile app. That's something that Minnesota's never had. And we will still continue to support the internet purchase. So you can just go online on a laptop or even at your local library. You can get on a computer there. So certainly we will have internet purchases available. And also that route that I think is so important is visiting our license agents. So those businesses across the state of Minnesota that sell hunting and fishing licenses, certainly continuing that more traditional way of getting your license. And I think that's so important, especially in some of our rural areas. I live rurally as well, being able to visit these shops and absolutely support their business, but purchase the license the way you always have, if that was the way that you did it previously.
And if you buy that license from a retailer, that business is still getting a little taste where they get 50 cents or a buck for every license sold to make it worth their while.
Yeah, they do get a little bit off every license sold, which really helps. And one of the big changes that I think we'll see is that there will be no longer your license printed in a durable tag. So the tag that you're used to kind of getting. So just recognize that your license itself is going to be printed on 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. So it doesn't change. I mean, it's still, you know, something you can hold in your hand, but it will just be printed on regular printer paper. So that is a change that I think people should be aware of.
Okay, I don't claim to be the most digitally savvy person on the planet, but I do. I do use my smartphone all the time, and I use all sorts of apps, so I'm looking forward to this. I can't download the app until Tuesday, right? This weekend, I can't download it?
Correct. You will not be able to download the app until we launch. The other thing I will say is part of us rolling this out was that we actually pulled in some folks across the state and certainly across the department that had never purchased a hunting and fishing license before. So we pulled in total newbies, Rob, and asked them, hey, can you please go buy this license or can you please go get this walk-in access validation? And they were able to navigate the system really well. And so we got really positive feedback from new users. And so don't feel if anyone's out there is a little overwhelming and man, there's a lot of these things that are just, they seem like barriers to entry. They're not. And so I'm hoping that people find that mobile app really easy to use, even if you've never purchased a license before.
So a hunting and fishing geek like me, it's not going to be able to sleep early Tuesday morning. I'm going to be logging. I'm going to be going to the app store at 2 a.m. I suspect. I'm looking for something that says Minnesota DNR licensing. And look for that app, and I'm going to download it like any other app. And then do I need my customer number to log in? How challenging is it going to be for me to log in the first time?
Well, first of all, I think like you, I haven't slept either. So I'm equally as excited looking forward to this. But yes, you'll be able to go in, download the app onto your phone. You can log in with your DNR customer number. And I think that's a change too that people will be really excited to see. You will have to create an account, but you will be able to use that DNR customer number. So I suggest people have that handy.
Okay, so Kelly, I download the app. I'm able to log into it. I purchase my license on it. Obviously, I'm going to need Wi-Fi or cellular coverage probably to purchase it. Once I've done that, does it stay on my phone even if I'm outside, you know, cellular range in the heart of the boundary waters and a CO bumps into me?
So this is one of the very exciting things that we are going to be able to offer our licensed buyers is that, yes, if you go out of cell range, if you go away from Wi-Fi, which I cannot recommend enough, everybody do every chance we get, but you can still access your licenses offline. The important thing is certainly if you're going to go and let's say you're going to go harvest a species up in the boundary waters and it needs to be registered. You're going to want to make sure that you're logged in before you go out of range so that you can actually go in and do a registration, even if you're off. But regardless, your licenses, if you're just talking about trying to pull up your licenses in areas without cell phone coverage, you absolutely will be able to do so.
So the license is going to be on my cell phone. That's how I'm going to show a conservation officer proof of licensure, correct? Now, Kelly, yes. I'm sorry. I gotta find ways to try to stump you here. But let's say I'm in the boundary waters for a week and I'm fishing and my cell phone doesn't have a charge anymore and a COS for the license. Am I in trouble? Huh?
This is an enforcement question. This is a tricky one. Okay. Here's what I will say. If your cell phone dies, I always recommend everybody bring an external charger into the boundary waters like I do every time just for safety. But also what I will say is that officer should be able to look you up right into the system as well. And so again, I would make sure that you do everything you can. The statute still applies where you have to have your license technically on your person. So make sure you have your cell phone in your pocket, but understanding things happen. And I would also say things are up to officer discretion. Absolutely. And I have incredible respect for our officers. So I think as long as you are abiding by all rules and regulations, which I'm assuming everybody is, then certainly our officers would be willing to work with you on that.
I would think so too. You're listening to WCCO Outdoors. We're chatting with Kelly Straka. She's the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Fish and Wildlife Division Director. Just a few minutes left. We're talking about the new electronic licensing system, which kicks off here on Tuesday, June 9th. Kelly, I'm trying to think of some other aspects of how the public interacts with the DNR that might get wrapped into this new system. Hunt firearm safety classes, can you register for those through the app? What about buying my trail stickers for, an ATV, for my boat? Will that eventually all be through the same new system? And will that be available immediately, or is that like a phase two?
I'm really excited you brought up the fact that we are phasing the rollout of the electronic licensing system. And here's what that means. This phase one that is going to launch on Tuesday, June 9th, that phase will have your hunting and fishing licenses as well as your trail passes. That will be going live on Tuesday, June 9th. However, we are working already on phase two, which is all of our vehicle titling and licensing. So those are your boat registrations and titles, your kayak, your canoe, your ATVs, your snowmobiles, all of the vehicle stuff. That is going to come in the next phase. Now, what I will say about that is to come full circle, legacy system for the vehicle titling and registration is still live. So users will not see any interruptions, no changes there until we move this over into the new system, which as of right now, we're slating, hoping to be able to roll out yet this year. But for Tuesday, June 9th, recognize that that's going to be changes to the hunting and fishing licenses and trail passes as well. So that's really exciting.
Kelly, long term, this new flexible system is going to give the agency some options, I would think, maybe with different types of licenses, that's in the future, I presume. That's not something you're unveiling now. You're not unveiling like a one-day resident license. It seems like there's an opportunity for new sales there where people might spontaneously buy a license. Hey, I'm out. Gosh, I've got the opportunity to fish. All of a sudden, now they can buy a license immediately, or maybe they'd be more likely to do that if they bought a 1 or a 3 day license.
Yeah, to your question about what's to come in the future, I think that's absolutely right. So we aren't making any changes to our license catalog right now. However, we are talking about what are we going to do with our license packages in the state of Minnesota. And so certainly those conversations are coming. As of right now, we're not proposing any changes. So you won't see any changes in the licenses that are offered in the catalog starting on Tuesday, June 9th. The one other thing I would add, Rob, because you asked a question earlier and I don't think I touched on it, was firearm safety registration. And a lot of those other sort of enrolling in even our adult hunter programs, those are intended to be part of this system moving forward. They will not be live. That will not be live on Tuesday, June 9th, but that will be coming. So that's something that people can look forward to as well.
Well, Kelly, we've covered a lot of ground. I appreciate you carving out all this time for me. I can tell you're excited about it. I think everyone's pretty optimistic as we're going into the weekend that we're going to kick this baby off.
Yeah, I think we are. We're really excited. We've had a chance to get in, obviously, and see the system, play around in the system, buy some things, explore new features like linked accounts, so you can actually purchase licenses for your kids, keep everything connected to your account. Spouse vouchers will be able to be sent directly to your spouse if you've got a linked account to them.
Excellent.
So I just think there's going to be more flexibility and more features, and I can't wait for people to take a chance to explore it.
Good. Well, I'm sure we'll know a whole lot more about it a week from now when we've all downloaded it onto our smartphones. Kelly, thanks for all your hard work on this project. To you and everyone else at DNR, and good luck in the coming week.
Thanks, Rob. We're really excited. Get outside.
Right. Good advice. Kelly Straka from the Minnesota DNR talking about the new electronic licensing system. It starts Tuesday, June 9th. Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages. WCCO Outdoors on News Talk 8 Thrill. Welcome back to the broadcast on this Sunday, June 7th, final segment of this week's show. I'm Rob Driesline. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Thank you to Kelly Straka, who spent the middle portion of this week's show talking about that new electronic licensing system, which kicks off on Tuesday, just 2 days from now. A few minutes left before we leave this week's show. We had a couple stories in outdoor news the past couple weeks involving conservation officers. You know, every week we have that cuffs and collars section in the paper, which every conservation officer in the state files a report. It goes then through Joe Albert, who is the DNR's Enforcement Division Information Officer. I think he probably tunes them up a little bit, edits it for consistency, and then he sends it to the media, including Outdoor News. And we print almost all of it, an entire page, in every print edition of Outdoor News. And of course, it's posted at our website, outdoornews.com. There's, what, 140 conservation officers around the state, something like that. So there's a report somewhere near you in the state of Minnesota from a conservation officer that's you know, it's hyper-localized. It's great content. And a lot of the COs are talking about kind of pretty basic protocol, right? Someone not having their fishing license with them, someone over the limit. There's a ton of ATV violations, things like that. But there's always a few that are, you kind of do a double take, like, that's one worth following up on. And the past couple of weeks, we've done that on a couple interesting stories. One involved a CO up in the Boundary Waters, Officer Anthony Bermel. This was in mid-May. A call came over dispatch that there were three paddlers, campers in the Boundary Waters. Their canoe had capsized during some of those high winds we had in mid-May. And they were stranded on an island without hardly any gear. Luckily, they had one bag they were able to grab that had a cell phone in a plastic bag. They were able to grab that and call for help. It was right when all those fires were really blasting that region. So all of the emergency personnel in that area were occupied with the fires. And Officer Bermel recognized he was probably one of the only law enforcement nearby that might be able to help these guys. It sounded like they were in their late teens, 18, 19, 20 years old, something like that. So Bermel, actually, he took a motorized boat in there. It sounded like he probably had to cross a couple portages. I was talking to Tim Lesmeister about that. He said, I'm almost sure he had to cross some portages by himself with a boat to get to these guys. And he did. I think he said it took him 3 hours to get in there to get to these guys. They were barefoot. They didn't have much for clothes. Luckily, they were all members, I guess, of a collegiate swim team. So, you know, fit guys who, when their canoe sank, in high winds, they must have got broadside to some high waves or something, were able to swim to shore and make this call. And Officer Bermel got in there and I got to think those guys were pretty happy to hear a motor coming at them, right? I mean, you're in the boundary waters. People don't like to hear motors, but I bet when those guys heard that one, they were pretty thrilled. And I'm glad they got out safely, tipped the hat to Officer Bermel, handling that situation solo and making sure what could have been a terrible situation turned out to just be, you know, an interesting story. And then this past week, we had another CO. This was Officer Jason Hansen, a Big Fork area, responding to a call of a young black bear trapped outside a chicken coop. So Officer Hansen responded to the call, went and checked it out and said, yeah, sure enough, we got a black bear stuck in a small leg hole trap. It was probably a small trap put out for, I don't know, a fox or a coyote or some smaller predator that would try to kill chickens. But this time it turned out a bear stepped into it and what's been caught, you know, probably wasn't seriously injured. It sounds like a couple toes were caught, but it was probably painful just enough that the bear couldn't get himself out. So the homeowner called the DNR and Officer Hansen shows up. And I mean, how do you remove, you know, even a 100-pound, 150-pound black bear from a trap, right? A smaller animal, you can throw a blanket or something over it. They've got ways of doing that to contain the animal so they can do it, let it go, and everyone lives happily ever after. You can't do that with a black bear. Very strong animals. So the officer actually used his .223 enforcement-issued rifle to shoot the springs out of this trap, and it released, and the bear got away. And I'm fairly adept at rifles. I'm not sure if that's what I would have thought of doing immediately, but it sounded like Officer Hansen had some experience with this in the past. Then he shot the trap off, and it sounded like the bear was still kind of tangled in a tarp wrapped around its part of its paw, and the bear was unaware that it had even been freed from the trap. So Officer Hansen got out of the truck with a pocket knife, and then kind of reached through the fence to cut the bungee cord holding this tarp, and then the bear bolted and didn't come back, and all's well that ended well in that story. So you never know what these conservation officers are going to encounter out there. I'm glad we've got them afield. They do great work. Couple positive stories from this spring to wrap up this week's broadcast. Everybody have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Gerisline signing off for WCCO Outdoors.